The Business Buzz Podcast. The Business Buzz with Mudiwa Mokjustice Gabaza.
Good evening and welcome to the Business Buzz for your weekly dose of business, finance and economics news right here on VFM. That's 88.1. We're broadcasting live from our studios right here in Bromfontein, Johannesburg. The time has just gone by 3 minutes after 7 p.m., which means we're giving you some of the best in the world of business. My name is Mudiwa Mob Justice Gavaz, and I'll be your host for tonight's show. Now, who's to say that the world of business can't be entertaining? Definitely make sure you hold on to your seats as we seek to keep you entertained, educated and intrigued about the world of business. Now for today, it is the last Thursday, yeah, of the month, which means, as is our tradition on the Business Buzz, we get into the brand new heavy. That's when we feature a young person in South Africa, 35 years and below, who is doing the things in their industry. And for today, we're going to be having quite an interesting show because we are going to be joined by Tina Sheruzane, who is a co-founder and CEO of Flex Club, which is a car rental platform for ride-hailing drivers that offers them a flexible path to car ownership. But before we get into all that, just some of the things that have been happening through this week is just the fact that today I attended a very interesting event where Uber, right? We all know Uber, we know Bolt, and basically these are the ride sharing platforms, and basically Uber has launched its Uber Go service in Johannesburg, and basically that's now the new lowest tier for passengers. And you'll remember that Uber has a number of different products that they offer to consumers. We have Uber X, I think that's the one that a lot of people use. There's Uber Black, you know, for everyone that wants to be driven around in style. There's Uber Van, if you and your mates want to go to a party or it's a company function, and there's a bunch of you. And then there's Uber Connect for, you know, the short distance travel when it comes to packages and stuff like that. So today they've launched Uber Go, and it's an interesting one simply because it means that they're now coming to, I guess, look for a clientele in a segment that they hadn't been really serving, but also responding to where the economy is at the moment, because a lot of people that were using, you know, Uber X, for example, you know, over the years, perhaps you've lost your job, or, you know, you're just trying to, you know, save money, or, you know, just make sure that you can save wherever you can. And they're trying to appeal to a new clientele. But at the same time, I do think that they may risk having their margin squeezed a little bit, because you might have people that are currently using UberX deciding that they're going to go for the lower tier product, which means that they're now squeezing their margins, and they would automatically need to have more rides or more cars on the road to make the same amount of money that they normally would. So, you know, I found that interesting, but more than anything else is just the fact that they're looking at the issue of car ownership, because that's typically been a big issue and a big you know, strife point for drivers. A lot of them, you know, taking on the burden of leasing cars, of going to finance their vehicles, etc. And now they've partnered up with a company called Move to try and make some of that affordability a bit more accessible. So really keen to see what that's going to mean, and how that's going to affect the relationship that Uber has with its drivers going forward. Coming back for today's show, keeping with the car theme, it's good that we're going to be talking to Tinashe just around how they're, you know, thinking around car ownership. So definitely make sure you turn, you don't turn that dial, and keep in touch with us on social media. On Facebook, we have our FM or Voice of Vits. You can find our other Facebook page, that is Vits Radio Academy. And then on Twitter, we're at VowFM. And then our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. Remember that you can stream the station live on VowFM.co.za /business. Otherwise, you can also find our great content on Vits.journalism.co.za /business. You can also go and check out our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify if you happen to miss the show. So that's what the show is looking like for the rest of the hour. Otherwise, on the other side of this, we get into the business wrap.
Gram Squad vibes are a real thing. So follow at Vow FM on Instagram and light up your feed. Business Rap with Lebo Pasha.
In our business wrap, we give you some highlights of the week's top trending business and economics news. And on the line for today, we are joined by Lebo Pasha, who is the general manager for Southern Africa at the African Management Institute, to give us some insight into what's been happening in and around the economy for the week. Lebo, greetings to you.
Greetings to you, Mugiwa, and the Vow FM listeners today.
No. Thank you so much for being with us. Now, I understand that you are concerned about the global chip shortage. I've actually been following this, you know, for a couple of months now, and it's actually quite interesting because I saw the other day that the likes of AMD and Texas Instruments were bringing out their results, and there's been a lot of demand, all of that stuff. Talk to us about this one.
Yeah, there's really been some huge demand for chips. And just to take a step back, I think the age of thinking of microchips going into very expensive and exclusive gadgets is gone. Nowadays, everything from the mobile phone in your hand, your radio, your laptop, even your home appliances. So even your TV, if you've got a smart TV, if you've got a decoder at home, all of those devices use a microchip. And another place where most people forget, your car. So if you've got a car, you're driving in a car, or using any form of transportation, be it a train or a bus, all of those forms of transportation use chips. And what we've seen happening with the COVID pandemic is that there's been a huge drive pushing people to work from home, and it hits most of the computer companies, whether it's a Dell or HP, or even Apple, which have come through and said even their iMac and iPad are going to see some delayed production, and they're expecting to lose more than $3 billion from lost sales or lost potential sales. So chips are in everything nowadays. Almost every single smart device, appliance that we have in the house does have some form of electronic circuitry, and they're all impacted by the shortage.
And then, sorry about that, but I think the other thing that's been happening in the world is the fact that, you know, very sad to hear about mango. What's happening on this front? You know, is it the end of an era?
I don't think yes, because despite the problems that SAA as a group have had, mango has historically really done well. They've survived really long. They've outshone a lot of other low-cost airlines, some of them having very strange names, like One Time, which was a one-hit wonder and disappeared on us. And even though we've seen a new entrant, Lyft, in the space, I do see mango carrying on. I think the biggest headache is now more around routes that were being serviced by mango. Not the busiest routes, which is obviously our Joburg to Cape Town route, our Joburg to Durban route, but the less common routes, like Bloemfontein to Cape Town route. So if you're staying in Bloem or you're staying in Cape Town and you want to travel between the two cities, you're going to most likely have to start paying a little bit more for your flight between those two cities. COVID has helped with the number of, or reducing the demand for flights, but I think we are definitely seeing more travel between most of our cities, a lot more air travel. And yeah, it would be sad to see mango go.
Do you think that there's any chance of, you know, a recovery? Because it sometimes feels as though some of these companies are literally dying off just as we're on the precipice of going back to normal.
Yeah, I think there is definitely a real opportunity to save mango. It definitely, unfortunately, lies in the hands of the business rescue practitioners and how this business will be turned around as a state-owned entity. But on its own, standing on its own, it's really done well in South Africa. It's really brought air travel and cheap travel to people across the country. So most of our major cities are being serviced from Cape Town, Bloem, Gqeberha, George, Durban. And what it's done is it's really changed the cost of travel. And I really do hope that they are able to save it, even with the much lower volumes. So What we've heard so far is that the five planes that Mango does own have been in disguise, the Boeing 737. They have been running up until they had a few issues around payments with the airport company of South Africa, so the company that runs our airports. So I think once that is sorted, we should see Mango coming back on stream. And yes, I hope that it will be back for good. It would be good to see some students and other people that need to get around the country having an option of cheaper flights. We need the competition.
We certainly hope that it does happen. And then on the last point, the situation in India does really, really look dire at the moment.
Yes, the situation in India is quite scary if you're following it. We've seen daily infections of more than 300,000 cases for almost a week now. And when you try and understand some of the causes behind this, it starts getting a bit scary because it brings it much closer to home. One of the big issues was a double mutation variant that came through that's been targeting younger and younger people and spreading a lot faster and not really impacted by some of the antibodies people have had from vaccines. We've seen social gatherings being a huge problem, especially with religious festivals, and people taking the opportunity of lower cases about 2 months ago to start having weddings and other family celebrations would be delayed. But the scary part is, again, India produces close to half of the vaccines for the world. So they are the people who are helping keep the world healthy. And they themselves have had a very slow vaccine rollout, and they did not manage to get ahead of this outbreak. And we're seeing the same thing happening in South Africa, which is why I'm saying it is starting to look scary. And you look at that combined with another factor that India's healthcare system just wasn't prepared for this surge in cases. It's been coming for about 2 months, but nothing much has been done. There's been no lasting capacity ramp up to allow the healthcare system to deal with this. And this could really be a sign of bad things to come for developing economies, and I hope not for South Africa. I hope we will learn from this and already start doing what we need to do.
All right. So that's been us with Lebo Pasha, who is the general manager for the African Management Institute for Southern Africa, giving us some insight into the week's top trending business and economics news. And he was highlighting what's been happening with, the potential closure of Mango. That one is not in a good financial state at the moment, just hoping that they'll be able to revive the business as things some go back to normal, highlighting the global chip shortage that's happening right now, and possibly some lessons that all of us can learn from the surge in COVID-19 cases that we are seeing over in India. So that's been it. On the other side of this, we get into the state of your 100 rand.
Business Rep with Lebo Pasha. The Buffalo Index on the Business Buzz.
In our Buffalo Index, we seek to tell you the state of your 100 rand, looking at what your Buffalo can do for you. And for today, since we have one of the co-founders of Flex Club, we decided to take a deep dive, onto their website and just see what can your 100 rand do for you. So we went on the low end of life. If you decide that you're going to go with the VW Polo Vivo, that's going to set you back around 51 or so buffaloes, that's around 5,000 rand or so. And then on the high end of life, if you decide that you're going to really splurge out, you're going to be looking at about 155 buffaloes, or about 15,000 rand. That's for a Mercedes-Benz C-Class. All of these are in partnership with Avis, but they do have two sides of the business from what I can see. If you're a private driver, but on the other side, if you're an Uber driver, one of the options that they do have there is a VW Polo Vivo, and that's going to set you back about 25 buffaloes per week. And that's what it's looking like on that end. So if you're in the market and you're interested in renting a car, that's what things are looking like on the Flex Club website. We're going to be hearing from Tinashe just how they come up with some of these prices and the business model that they do have on hand. So that's been it. On the other side of this, we get into the main topic.
More justice on the Business Buzz.
For today, we are happy and privileged to be joined by Tinashe in studio. He is a co-founder and CEO of Flex Club, which is a car subscription platform and based here in South Africa. His name is Tinashe Ruzane, and we're going to be talking to him. Firstly, just around the business itself, you know, maybe getting some background around how that business started, and the team that's actually running the business, and maybe looking a little bit into the future, just around where the business is going and, you know, what their vision is. But remember that if you want to join in the conversation, let us know your thoughts. If you're someone who has used Flex Club, you can let us know on social media. We are via FM or Voice of Vids. Our other Facebook page is Vids Radio Academy, and then on Twitter we're at via FM, and then our hashtag is hashtag business a buzz. So, as I said, we have Tinashe in studio. Tinashe, how are you, man?
Very well, and you, with you?
No, doing all right, all right.
That's great.
I think a good place for us to start, because in our Buffalo Index, we've already spoken about, you know, some of the cars that are on offer on the low and upper end, the fact that you guys are offering to private individuals, to Uber drivers, etc. So, to get things going, Flex Club, what is it?
So Flex Club is a car subscription marketplace.
Yeah.
So we offer a variety of subscriptions for both ride-sharing customers and also private customers, as you pointed out, that allows them to subscribe for a car on a flexible basis.
Yeah.
If they decide to swap the car or cancel the subscription at any time, they can do so. When they order a car on our marketplace, we deliver it to their home in under a week.
Yeah.
And it's as simple as that. We try to make it as simple as buying a pair of sneakers online.
I like that.
And yeah, we're pretty excited about the prospect of what we can do in the South African market, the traction we've seen so far. And we think that this is really the future of how people consume cars. Cars as a service is what some might say. Just because a lot of people think that, you know, cars are actually an asset. And I think many more people are waking up to the idea that they're not an asset.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's actually a service that you pay. You pay a cost for, whether you're paying that cost to the bank or whether you're paying it to a subscription service like us.
Yeah.
It's all the same.
Okay. Before we get into, I guess, the foundations of the business itself, I want to draw on something that we're talking about off air before the show started. And the one of the questions that I asked you, Nashe, was, are you guys Uber-fying, I guess, the space? And he gave, you know, such an amazing answer. I wish that I had recorded it at the time. Yeah.
So in some regards, yes. If you think about what Uber did to the market, as far as ride hailing, ride sharing, or even the taxi market's concerned, Uber came to the market and made it frictionless. You know, some people used to joke that it felt like a remote control for real life. You press a button and you see a car come around the corner, all driven by technology. The fact that we have smartphones, that we have GPS technology in our smartphones, where before that, the old school method of doing it would have been pick up the phone, call the taxi company, some dispatch, you know, control person would have sent a taxi out to your location, and that might have taken an hour to 2 hours to get to you. Where in this case, it would be a tap of a button and everything streamlined because it's digital.
Yeah.
So to that extent, we are, you know, Uberifying, or I like to say we're digitizing the prospect of car shopping and how that works. And a lot of what we're doing is actually bringing efficiency to how that happens. You know, so when a customer applies for a car on our marketplace, everything's done online. We verify that it's a real human being. We verify that it's a human being that can afford the car.
Yeah.
We verify that they actually have some sort of credit track record in the South African market before we deliver the car to their house.
Yeah.
Versus the alternative, which is you have to walk into a dealer, choose a car, negotiate financing, negotiate insurance, and then figure out whether you want an extended maintenance plan. I like to say jokingly that we offer the ability to date a car before you marry a car.
Ah, I like that.
And, you know, the old school way of buying a car is you have to marry a car after deciding in 2 weeks whether or not this is the car you want to marry.
Mm. So the other one is, I think you touched on it, you know, in the beginning, just around the fact that one way or another, money is going out, right? Whether you choose to give the money to Flex Club or to the bank, money is going out, right? So from a value proposition point of view, how are you guys, how do you guys position yourselves when trying to get, you know, a share of someone's wallet.
Yeah, so I think the important thing is to actually reflect on how car buying works in South Africa, first and foremost. The majority of South Africans actually finance their cars. New car buyers finance their vehicles. So most people can't afford to outlay pure cash to buy a car. And furthermore, the majority of those finance on what's called a balloon payment. So the default, if you ever read the fine print on a TV ad with a car on it, and it says from 2999 for 1999, the fine print reads that it's a 72-month finance agreement with a 35% balloon payment.
Mm.
That's now seen as a default in the market. That default is shifting, obviously, because affordability is shifting. It's now moving to 96 months. So with that construct, what you're agreeing to do when you finance a car in a balloon payment is saying, I'm going to rent this car from the bank, and in 6 years' time, 72 months, I'm going to buy the car from the bank for 35% of the price that the car is worth today. So we said, that's a very dangerous construct because it actually destroys wealth, what some call negative equity.
Mm.
Basically, it's a phenomenon that occurs when you have a loan tied to a purchase where what you owe the bank for the loan is more than what the value of the asset or the good you've purchased.
Mm.
And that will always be the case on a balloon payment financing construct for the first 4 years of the 6 years.
Yeah.
So we said, look, that's a very dangerous construct. Why are South Africans buying cars that way? It's because there is no alternative. The other stat was interesting for us was most new car buyers in South Africa actually change their car after 38 months.
Mm.
So now reflect on that. People are financing a car over 72 months, even though in 3 years' time they want a different car. And in 3 years' time, they're going to owe the bank more than what the car that they have is worth. So which means to get the new car that they want, they have to now pay the bank a little bit more than what they get when they sell the car or trade in the car.
Mm.
We said, well, that's actually just a mismatch in the products available to the consumers.
Yeah.
And so our proposition was that we could provide flexible subscriptions that rival the monthly cost of a balloon payment plus insurance plus the maintenance plan without tying you down to this long-term commitment or tying you down to this notion of negative equity or destroying your wealth.
Yeah.
If you accept right now that a car is a service, it's an expense.
Yeah.
It's not an asset, it's not an investment.
Yeah.
And that's where we come in saying that this is a better service, it's a better expense for you than adopting a balloon payment construct.
Now, taking a step back, right, because you've given us the value proposition, how did you arrive at a position where you said, okay, cool, we can start a business and offer this, right? Because my understanding is that you actually left quite a nice position at Uber before you decided to, you know, strike it out on your own to do something like this. Was it the exposure to the Uber model? Like, how did you guys actually decide to formulate this business?
I mean, I think all businesses are rooted in the idea that there's a massive problem out there and the solutions that are available are not adequate.
Yeah.
And we just, you know, grew in conviction that we could build a better solution. So while at Uber, where I was the head of vehicle solutions for Uber across Europe, Middle East, and Africa, I was engaging with banks, leasing companies, car manufacturers to help design products that increase access to cars for Uber drivers, realizing that the way that asset financing or vehicle financing worked wasn't just broken in South Africa, but just broken everywhere.
Yeah.
And we felt that, well, everything we've learned at Uber about reducing friction, creating a better experience for the customer, we could bring that to the table in the automotive industry.
Yeah.
And we saw the trend picking up steam in markets like Europe and the US, where car subscriptions were now starting to come into the zeitgeist.
Yeah.
And we felt that this was actually the right time. As South Africans, being a South African myself, I felt that we're very car-centric.
Mm.
We love our cars. Our cars mean more to us than just move from A to B. In fact, in some cases, they're extension of our homes. You know, we have, you know, our clothes and all sorts of manner of, you know, personal goods stored in them. And that's obviously a function of the fact that our cities are very, you know, spread. They spread quite widely.
Mm.
So we felt like South Africa's car-centric enough to really rethink the way it approaches car ownership and car purchasing.
Yeah.
And that's how we launched the subscription model, initially starting off with rideshare drivers who we knew had bad options. They couldn't even access vehicle financing. They were renting cars on Facebook or Gumtree or something like that.
Yeah.
Oftentimes being exploited. So we felt that we could start off designing the product and creating a product for that segment and eventually graduating to a product that we felt could be compelling for consumers.
Mm. Now, you heard at the beginning of the segment that we take time to celebrate a young person in South Africa, you know, who's doing the thing. So if you don't mind asking, right, firstly, how old are you, right? And then it's three questions. Firstly, how old are you? The second one is, you know, where did you grow up, right? And how did you end up, I guess, career-wise? Could you take us through that?
Yeah, sure. So I'm at the tail end of what some might call youth. I am now 35. So I'll have to hand over my youth card this year. But I grew up in Pretoria.
Yeah.
So in the north of Pretoria, yeah, a pretty, you know, sort of common middle class, you know, family and upbringing. I eventually kind of came to this through a myriad of different paths, but the first was I became quite fascinated with mobility and how people move around very early on. So at the age of 19, I was obviously just now entering the university sphere. It was my first year of university. I was studying accounting at the time.
Where?
At Tux.
Okay, Tux, yeah.
So true to the Pretoria, you know, upbringing. And I thought that I had an idea around how we could streamline public transport, and I had this pitch that I made to the municipality. But that's what got my taste buds introduced to the idea of entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
It wasn't, you know, to be, obviously, I think I was too wet behind the ears to understand what I was really pitching.
Yeah.
But from that point, I realized that there was more in this prospect of entrepreneurship that I wanted to kind of double tap into. I eventually decided to import scooters from China.
Yeah.
So I imported scooters with the idea of selling them to fellow students. This is now at the tail end of my undergrad career. That too also had some very expensive lessons, you know, for me. But after all of that, I realized that, you know what, it's pretty clear to me that I can't follow the traditional, you know, path that's set based on what my undergrad was, which is accounting, which would have been the CA path. But instead, I should actually just venture into entrepreneurship. And I did an MBA in entrepreneurship at Gibbs.
Yeah,
it was the inaugural entrepreneurship MBA that they had. And that's where I really learned, you know, a lot, got exposed to a lot of, you know, major South African entrepreneurs that imparted a lot of important lessons during that year. Following which, I then joined, you know, Deloitte as a strategy consultant. So I joined the strategy and innovation team in corporate venturing, so helping big businesses launch new products, new ventures. And after 2 years of doing that, I felt that I needed to really get my hands dirty again, or at least feel like I was contributing more directly. And I left and I joined a company called the Way2 Project, which was an impact business looking to help micro businesses in the townships grow from being a micro business to a medium-sized business, whether through capital or training. I spent 2 years doing that, and that's how I got exposed to Uber. So Uber approached us at the time saying, look, we are launching this new idea in South Africa. We have come across a number of drivers in South Africa that could be operating on our platform but have no vehicles.
Yeah.
How do we give them access to vehicles? And we had just launched a new fund providing financing to entrepreneurs, micro-entrepreneurs in the township. It wasn't a perfect fit for our fund. We did trial something, but that was enough for me to approach the Uber team and say, I think you guys are sitting on something that's really important. This is good work that could be done, you know, more effectively if in collaboration with the local ecosystem. So I then joined the Uber team and started designing the very first vehicle solutions program in South Africa, engaging with, you know, national treasury, you know, different enterprise development funds in South Africa, designing products. And off that, Uber then kind of set me on this, you know, launch path that allowed me to see different markets, Nigeria, Kenya. Eventually, I was leading Middle East as well. And then I moved to Amsterdam to lead Europe, Middle East, and Africa to design, you know, the whole team. And that's where I then got conviction that there's something here. There's something cooking that we're just missing.
Yeah.
And that's why we launched Flex Club.
All right, cool. Now, before we go to a break, one of the things we always try to understand from our brand new heavies when it comes to the upbringing, because I feel like there's a lot of lessons that are learned along the way. But sometimes the journey of an entrepreneur can be lonely, it can be stressful, etc. You know, the support structure that you have around you, because I know that with Flex Club, for example, you started it in conjunction with a couple of people, right? So what type of support structure do you have around yourself, whether it's friends, family, video games, whatever?
So a number of different support structures that I count on. First and foremost, my family. So I've always been inspired by my mother. So I was raised by a single mother who worked incredibly hard to make sure that I have the opportunities that I have, from an education perspective, exposure to different skills, different talents that I could develop over time.
Yeah.
And seeing her work was obviously a massive driver in how I decided to approach my own career. My wife, incredibly powerful ally. Because as you pointed out, this is a very lonely journey. You need that sounding board, the voice of reason that has a different perspective, to what I might have. My sister, actually, in fact, I call the three of them my three queens. And they have been incredible voices. Outside of my family, obviously I've got extended family that have played their part as well, but outside of that, I have, very close mentors, some of which are on our board now at Flex Club.
Yeah.
That are seasoned business executives that I count on. They've seen this rodeo a number of times. It's not their first movie. And if I kind of go to them with a challenge, more often than not, they've seen it before and they can give me their views on how they had approached it before.
Mm.
Or even if they haven't seen the exact same thing, how they might approach it now with the experience that they have.
Yeah.
And that's allowed me to avoid rookie mistakes.
Mm.
I feel like, there's an old African proverb, the idea that it takes a village to raise a child.
Yeah.
The same is true about a business or a startup.
Yeah.
It takes an entire village. A lot of people need to kind of contribute their heart and soul into seeing it, come to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of people in this village, whether it be my family, my mentors, board members, different advisors along the way, friends to some extent, peers, other entrepreneurs that I look up to. That have contributed to shaping the views that I have and ultimately how we shape our strategy as a business.
Okay, cool. So we're in studio with Tinashe Ruzanya, who is a co-founder and CEO of Flex Club, giving us some insight into their business, where it came from, the journey, their value proposition, and ending off talking about the support structure that's helping to keep him sane as they go through this rodeo, as he described it. On the other side of this, we're going to be getting into, another business in our COVID Business Watch, but we will definitely be back with Tinashe. Keep it locked. This is the Business Buzz.
COVID Biz Watch. COVID Biz Watch. On the Business Buzz.
In our COVID Business Watch, we look and see what the impact of COVID-19 has been on various businesses in and around South Africa. And for today, we are joined by Nolwazi Mkize, who is the founder and director at Womantla Farming. Nolwazi, greetings to you.
Greetings to you, sir.
No. Thank you so much for being with us. Can you just give us some insight into Womantla Farming and I guess what type of trends you've seen during COVID-19?
So Womantla Farming is I could just say it's still a little baby because it's a year old and it's just a couple of months. We specialize in crop farming thus far. So last year was the year that we started, and unfortunately, we started in a year of hiccups. We could all say a lot of things happened throughout the whole world, throughout different departments and sectors, but in our farming department, we were the essentials, remember, because everyone needed food at that time. So as time progressed, the stores that we were supplying, we started having to either have a battle to supply, and sometimes you'll find many farmers supplying the same amount of food due to various reasons. For just an example, many farmers had a large quantity of spinach last year, especially towards the end of the year. Reason being, due to cold weathers, some people couldn't farm cabbages, and I'm one of those people. I tried out cabbages, but then due to the harsh weathers, it didn't grow. as well. So then spinach was my second option. And then that made it very hard to get it into stores because many people were trying to also get their spinaches into stores. That means the stores were willing to buy it at a very low price due to the fact that they also were affected by COVID-19.
Now, you've already highlighted, a number of different issues. And, one would think that because you guys were an essential service and, despite the fact that people were, largely sitting at home and there was that depression in economic activity, people still had to eat. I guess on the outside, would think that business was thriving, but it sounds like you were facing a number of challenges. So I guess, against that backdrop then, what type of ways were you then forced to think outside of the box?
So instead of supplying stores, local supermarkets, I decided to do locals and informal traders. So by that, I meant I started selling most of my goods via Facebook and rent and delivered to people's homes. Instead of selling my branch of spinach to Checkers for like R2 or Spar for like R2, I ended up selling at the cost which is normal, which is like R10, to cover costs for my workers and also to cover all the various costs that are into the business.
No, thank you so much for that. And that actually makes sense, the approach that you took. And then lastly from us is, because you started your business during such a tough time, but you're still going, It means that you must be doing something right. So what lessons or what pearls of wisdom do you have for maybe other entrepreneurs that may be struggling but are looking for some type of a sign?
Well, first things first, I did a whole year of research before I started my business. So in that year of research, I was looking for the cons and pros for it. So I was prepared for weather conditions that would actually wipe up my harvest and all of that. Same thing, I did articulate a similar problem last year. Where I farm, there's usually like frost in the morning. It's cold. It's by the PMB area, Pietermaritzburg. So it gets really cold. I lost half a hectare of green peppers last year due to cold weathers. So now, it's just all about learning from the mistakes and finding out from other farmers what you can do and trying to implement new ideas within the space. And like I said, Womanda is still like a year old, but already I'm planning on adding livestock by the end of the month. So I'm growing in both crops and also livestock.
No, that's amazing, and we hopefully will have you again, to talk about, some of that growth as you move your business forward. That was us with Nolwazi Mkhize, who is the founder and director at Womandla Farming, giving us some insight in our COVID business watch into the impact of COVID-19 on her business. On the other side of this, we continue with the show.
COVID Biz Watch. On the Business Buzz. On the go, take us with you anywhere on www.bofm.co.za. The Business Buzz.
We're in studio with our brand new heavy for the month of April 2021. We are with Tinashe Ruzane, who is the co-founder of Flex Club. They are an automotive subscription service. He is actually, I hadn't said this at the beginning, he's actually our first in-studio guest, right? We are socially distancing, but he is our first guest in studio since, I'd say, March last year. So, it's really great, to be talking to someone like this. I guess that, that actually helps us to talk about, COVID-19, right? Mm-hmm. You've just heard from, Nolwazi and how, she started her business during the pandemic and the way that she's responded to all of this. From your point of view, what has the pandemic done? Because, has it increased because transport trends, were on the low. At the same time, we heard that the used vehicle market was on the rise. All of these different dynamics. What did you guys see?
Yeah, so we saw a number of different things. I think the key is actually just remembering that, as an entrepreneur, you're really the captain of the ship, and that just means that you have to figure out how to fight both the headwinds and, you know, make sure you make gains of the tailwinds. And we try to think closely about what are really the tailwinds and headwinds that COVID-19 was bringing to the market. So obviously on the headwind front, we saw, you know, so some of our major partners today include brands like Avis and Europcar, and we saw their businesses completely decimated. You know, businesses like Hertz in the US filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy because no one was traveling for leisure, no one was traveling for business. But then thinking through, what's the opportunity with a headwind like that versus a tailwind, which Nolwazi alluded to, is the idea that more and more businesses were looking to go direct to consumer via digital channels. And e-commerce was now suddenly booming. Delivery was booming. So make sense of all of those different things and rethink what our strategy should be. You know, if we go back to this analogy that we're the captains of the ship, but we have the sails, you know, in our control, how do we adjust our sails to maximize, you know, the momentum of the business overall? So that's how we actually got to the point where we established conviction that this is the right time to invest in consumer car subscriptions. You know, when, you know, some might have said there's too much blood on the streets, don't deploy capital. We took an alternative view of leaning in, saying this is a product that we think matters with or without COVID, and COVID is just now helping bring this into the forefront because more and more consumers are open to the idea of consuming products via digital channels exclusively.
Now, another, you know, impact, because I like the fact that you're touching on capital, because even during this pandemic, you know, I hear that you guys were able to raise some money. I think $5 million, if I remember correctly, I think that's roughly 75 million rand or so. So can you take us through the funding journey, you know, of the business, I guess, before the, and after the pandemic? And does it change anything that we're in a pandemic? Like, are you now pitching your businesses over Zoom? Like,
that was the craziest part of fundraising through the pandemic. I think, you know, in the tech world, typically you're raising capital. When you go on a roadshow to raise capital, you're, you know, sort of face to face with investors. You're building the rapport face to face. Where in this construct, we had to do that, like you said, via Zoom. And there were a subset of investors that were open to that idea, while other investors wanted to be maybe a little more pragmatic and close their checkbooks and said, look, we're not going to deploy any capital until...
We need to see it.
Exactly. Until the clouds have cleared. But we're fortunate. I mean, I think, you know, sometimes, you know, luck plays a big part of all of this. But as the old saying goes, luck is when preparation meets opportunity. And I feel like we have been working on this strategy, on this, you know, this proposition for a while, and we happened to come across an opportunity to engage with investors that were just incredibly progressive. In the likes of Kindred Ventures, which is our largest investor to date. But both Kindred Ventures, CRE Venture Capital, both US-based funds that believe in what we're doing, not just in South Africa, we also operate in Mexico as well, but in what we can do in many more markets given the opportunity. I think we were able to kind of lean into that. They bought into the vision because we shaped a vision of what our business looks like even beyond the pandemic, which is very difficult to do when everyone's kind of painting a picture of doom and gloom. Things will never be the same again. But that's I guess that's the journey of an entrepreneur, even without COVID. Every entrepreneur has to fight that battle, the roller coaster ride, you know, the highs and the lows. And we just made sure that we kept the conviction that even in this low, we have to have a firm view of what our vision is long term.
Was this the first capital raise?
It was not. So our very first capital raise was in 2019. We raised $1.2 million in January 2019. So this was an augmentation of that.
So not a Series B as such?
No. So we still very much, we think of ourselves as a seed stage business. Because, I mean, my view is that we haven't kind of broken through the ground. If you think about a seedling, we haven't broken through the ground in the sense that, you know, product market fit is very clearly established. You know, obviously now we're seeing very strong, you know, tailwinds that we're on the right path. Our new product on the consumer front is doing incredibly well. You know, signups are growing over 200% per month. So watch this space. There very well may be another fundraise in the not too distant future.
And can you give us a sense of, you know, what that uptake has actually been like, users, I guess even contrasting South Africa versus some of the other markets you guys are in?
Absolutely, yeah. So, I mean, to go back to the sign-up piece, I think what we saw, what we were incredibly surprised by was how open South African consumers were to the idea of flexible, you know, car access,
yeah,
or subscriptions in general. Sign-ups have continued to increase over 200% per month, which is phenomenal. It just means that there's massive demand for the product. We now serve hundreds of members that are subscribing for a vehicle. You know, as you pointed out earlier, a wide spectrum of vehicles. So we have, you know, commercial customers that are using their vehicles for business use, yep, like rideshare drivers, to private customers that are using their vehicle just for personal use, all the way from an entry vehicle like a Kia Picanto to a luxury vehicle like a BMW X3.
Yeah.
And we're seeing even greater demand, you know, come through from other vectors that we hadn't considered before. Small businesses that maybe don't want to go the traditional route of financing a vehicle through a bank, mm, and would rather subscribe for vehicles, you know, through our platform. So that's been incredibly encouraging. We, yep, see massive signs there. And I think now with our partners on board, we're well placed to take advantage of that demand. You know, as I pointed out, our business is not South Africa specific. We feel that South Africa was a good market to build out the foundation.
Yeah.
But we're also present in Mexico. And our Mexican business is about to experience a massive boom. The commercial business in Mexico has a much larger market in comparison. So one of the stats I like to point to is the idea that South Africa has approximately 20,000 rideshare drivers,
yeah,
that choose to use platforms like Bolt or Uber to earn a living. Mexico has over 300,000.
Wow.
The U.S. has over 1 million.
Yeah.
They're 5 million around the world.
Yeah.
So there's a massive segment there that kind of, you know, really points to a massive opportunity for us to grow.
Mm.
But similarly, if you look at the broader population, South Africa is obviously a 60 million or thereabout, you know, population. Mexico is more than double that. So we definitely expect that there's a lot more growth to be had in other markets that have similar characteristics to South Africa, whether that be across the African continent, whether that be across, you know, Latin America more broadly, or even potentially Southeast Asia. So we're excited about, you know, how our business is placed to take advantage of that.
Yeah. Now, as we end off our discussion, you know, I want to focus on you a little bit. And firstly, just to get a sense of, before the last break, we spoke about your support structure, but as a CEO, as a young CEO, as a business owner, like, how do you keep it all together? How do you, I guess, just make sure? Because, you know, right now we're in a student environment, someone is finding it hard just to balance, you know, the subjects in university, but, you know, you're balancing the needs and pressures of employees, of, you know, stakeholders, suppliers, you know, your business partners, investors, South Africa, Mexico, you know, all of these things are all, I guess, swirling around in your head one way or another. How are you keeping it all together?
So the one framework I like to use is the framework established in sports. Mm. You know, business, as Mark Cuban might say, is the ultimate sport.
Yeah.
And, you know, the management practices that you can adopt as an entrepreneur when you're building out a business or building out a team are incredibly well served by sports. So none of what we've achieved is achieved just by me. There's an entire team of incredibly capable individuals that power all of this. And my role is to just ensure that they have the resources they need to build or really live out their talents.
Mm.
Just like a sport manager might. So if you think about a football club, for example,
yeah,
what's the role of the club's manager relative to the players on the pitch? And I think the one thing that allows me to keep my sanity is that I have complete confidence in the players we have on the pitch. So I can't take the credit for, you know, how the team performs. Ultimately, it's up to them as the players to deliver on the results. But it's my responsibility to make sure that they have the resources they need to deliver their best performances. And that's actually how not just me, but every leader inside Flex Club pursues sanity, is making sure we can scale our impact by bringing on capable people,
yeah,
that we can just get out of the way. We can just get out of their way so that they can actually deliver their maximum impact.
And then speaking of resources, what are you reading at the moment?
It's a good question. I feel like most of my reading is actually done in micro segments.
Yeah.
So I'm big on articles. Yeah. A few publications that are my go-tos. So local publications, Business Day, Bloomberg, a lot of Business Insider, a number of publications that I use to feed how I see the market evolving.
Yeah.
I've turned on my Google alerts on all the key terms that I feel are relevant to me. So that comes through every single morning, and that's how I start my morning is, you know, with it's part of my morning sort of ritual is to consume what's happening in the market. But then beyond that, just about to get started. I haven't actually started officially, but I'm just about to get started on No Rules Rules by Reed Hastings.
Okay. And that's the founder of Netflix, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I have a lot of respect for Reed, and I have a lot of respect for what he's built in his I consume a lot of YouTube as well, which must be said for a lot of younger entrepreneurs out there and how they consume content. A lot of my top, you know, entrepreneurs and CEOs, I've seen virtually all of their interviews, and made notes furiously on everything. And Reed is just one of those that where I've just been amazed by his management philosophy and how different it is to the traditional way of managing. So going back to this idea of, you know, we're playing in a team, it's a club. How do you become better as a manager? Those are sort of things I'm trying to continue to develop over time.
Okay, cool. So as we round up the discussion, our tradition on the Business Buzz is to ask, what do you want your legacy to be?
Wow. That's a profound question.
Yes, yes.
I think, to be honest, I'd just like to be a part of a broader movement and know that I contributed something to changing the way, you know, the way consumers engage with a specific product or the way a problem is approached. Ultimately, every entrepreneur out there is looking to solve a problem, and I'd like to build a solution that outlives me or any of the team members that are part of this team today. And that's ultimately what defines a strong legacy, and I hope that we can achieve that, but I'm certain that the team we have right now can do that.
Okay, cool. On the other side of this, we come to the end of the show. This is the Business Buzz.
Mob Justice on the Business Buzz.
And with that, we've come to the end of today's show. Thank you so much to everyone who was listening. But more importantly, thank you so much to our first in-studio guest since before the pandemic. That's our brand new heavy for the month of April, Tinashe Ruzane, who is the co-founder and CEO of Flex Club. He gave us insights into, you know, running that business, how it came about, his career, his curiosity when it came to the world of mobility. And I think my biggest take away, you heard him talking about team. That was one of the big things that I picked up on, you know, throughout the discussion, that it's about the team, and it's about bringing different skills and knowledge together, you know, in the pursuit of a common goal. And in this case, it's to grow the business that is Flex Club. I guess before we go, Tinashe, how can people actually find Flex Club online?
Yeah, so we are on flexclub.co.za. If you happen to be in the market for a car, please do check us out. And feel free to browse and shop on there. Guarantee that in less than a week, we can have the car at your door. But yeah, we're also on all social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter as well.
Okay, cool. Thank you to our amazing team. Our technical producer is Kutlano Serame, together with our producers, that is Glory Mabuza and Tado Klimba, as well as Slindlen Sibi and Siabonga Mota. So that's been it for today's show. Remember that you can keep in touch with us on Facebook. We have our FM of Voice of Vits. You can find our other Facebook page, that is Vits Radio Academy. And then on Twitter, we're at Vow FM, and then our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. Remember that you can search for us on all the major streaming, all the major podcast streaming sites, and then you can also find us on vits.journalism.co.za/business. So that's been it for today's show. Don't turn that dial. There's more great content coming up on the Vow FM lineup. So from myself, Mdio Mob, Justice Kavasa, and the rest of the team, it is good evening and take care.
The Business Buzz with Mdio Mob, Justice Kavasa. The Business Buzz Podcast.